everybody, and welcome to the Blind Handyman Show. Show number 228, this 25th day of March, 2008. We're recording right now at the Little Ranch House Studio on Southwood Drive in Lufkin, Texas. For about an hour, we're going to be talking about building, repairing, and maintaining. All, of course, designed with the blind in mind. Our hosts for the show, here they are, ladies and gentlemen, Don Patterson.
Hi there, Thomas. By golly.
You introduced you separately this week.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, that's the only way I have it. It says in my contract.
I mean, that's the way we're going.
That's right.
Buddy.
Yeah.
After that talking to me I got last week.
That's right, boy.
And here he is, the incomparable Don Shaw.
Hey, Mr. Houston. From Burke, Texas.
Well, we're off to a rather rocky start.
Bedroom community of Burke, Texas.
That's right.
My name is Tom Houston, but here he is, folks. Here's the Mr. Blind Handyman, the creator and producer of the Blind Handyman Show. Ladies and gentlemen, I introduce to you at this time, Phil Parr.
Boy.
Mr. Blind Handyman.
We're off to a rather rocky start.
At this rate, show 229 may be in jeopardy.
Maybe.
Listen, I didn't have a speaker turned up. I have to have you brought through the board. I couldn't hear the thing ringing, and actually we were got to talking, and it was nothing important, I guarantee you that.
Time got away from us.
I can hear you now, that damn Tom ain't calling.
Thomas, he gave you several hints there, too.
Yeah, he did. I'm a little slow on Tuesday afternoon.
Is that right? Well, how's Marthy?
After the nurse left.
Is Martha home yet?
No, she's still there.
She's still there, and you're still here.
They're doing some kind of procedure this afternoon or in the morning one.
Is that right?
Where they can introduce antibiotics into her system without... it's not the intravenous. It's the intravenous thing, but it's the major one.
Oh, the big stuff.
The big stuff.
This is a deal on her neck that they do.
No, I think they're going to stick to the arm, left arm. But I'm not sure I quite understand it.
Oh, maybe we don't want to understand it.
Probably would be better if I didn't understand it.
Better off if we don't understand it, because it may happen to us someday. I bet the kids are wondering, why all these old folks are talking about, you know, being sick.
Yeah.
And that's what we do. That's what old folks do.
And prunes and stuff like that.
Prune nog and wonderful things like that.
Anyway, the University of Texas, I might add, is doing wonderful. They're in the Sweet 16 once again.
They are.
They will be playing. But, man, they're going to play Friday night, and they're going to play Stanford University.
Down Houston, right. Yeah.
How about those Rockets, Thomas?
Oh, boy, the Rockets. They've lost three now, but they've won about 21 in a row, didn't they?
21 or two in a row, I think, yeah.
They broke a team record.
And that's without Yao Ming?
Exactly, after Yao Ming got hurt. They won the last eight or nine, didn't they?
So I wonder how secure his future is, Rocket is.
Always use him here on the blind handy, man.
I guess he could always go with Roger Clemens to the Yankees or something.
Exactly.
Take some steroids.
Stanford has two big old guys in the middle, and they're twins.
Oh, yeah?
And they're both 7 feet tall. They're twin brothers. So it's going to be a test for them Friday night, buddy.
Can you see that on TV?
I'm going to watch it. Yes.
Oh, you can. You can see those on it. Because I was going to say, if you can't see it on TV, you can always hear it on the new 92 Country.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah. I did some promo. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Livingston.
Well, that's good to know, but it'll be on TV. I guarantee.
Livingston radio station's running it.
Oh, okay.
Can't hope that Houston keeps winning and keep me in business. I get $25 a pop for doing those.
Could live with a few of those.
Yeah, as long as they keep winning.
Well, yeah. No kidding. Really?
So I don't know. Anyway, so this is March Madness, right?
That's exactly right. This is really probably the most exciting time of the year for the basketball, as far as basketball is concerned for college. I watched A&M play the other day, and boy, they had it won. I don't know what happened at the end, but they were ahead by 10 points in the second half and blew it.
Really?
Yeah. They should have won that game. They won everything but the last 5 minutes.
See, that's amazing to me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I was in their corner.
Well, we've got kids at A&M. Speaking of that, Phil Parr's opening for Ray Price Saturday night at Bryan College Station.
Oh, is that right?
That's right, isn't it? That's exciting.
Well, good for you. It is.
Oh, Ray Price keeps on winning. I get $25 a pop for that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the wrong thing.
But then gasoline, $3.45. So $3.45, put down your four.
Kid, yeah, you seven. Get that to zero.
It'd be a toss-up, wouldn't it?
Yeah, maybe I ought to raise my...
I think you ought to raise your fees.
I've got you. Oh, he gives me a little more than that for...
In my defense, I had no idea. I heard the cues from Phil a while ago on the intro.
Yeah.
But I thought y'all were playing with
me. You didn't think we were on the air. It was after three.
I didn't know that. I figured you'd wait until at least you had me to introduce you.
I'm glad you didn't tell some off-color joke like...
Mr. Houston, you need no defense, sir.
You do. You need no defense. We love you.
Thank you, Donald. Thank you, Phil.
Reach an email for us.
Just because Mark Christie's going to do the openings from now on.
Just because Mark is waiting in the wings.
That's right.
I need to call Mark. I haven't talked to Mark in a long time.
He has always wanted
doing. I'd like to hear from him.
He's always wanted that position.
I talked to John Bennett this morning, and he's taking partial credit for heaven.
That's really nasty.
That's mean, isn't it?
We're not show 229 is not going to happen.
Cut that out, Shaw. Can you edit that out?
Yeah.
I mean, he's probably got family listening.
Oh, he probably.
You know, if John Bennett heard that, he'd be laughing.
He'd love it. Oh, yeah. He'd be that's laughing. Yeah. I wouldn't say anything about him now that I wouldn't have said he's alive.
Probably took partial credit for it.
He probably did say he wrote it.
Yeah,
he would probably.
Anyway.
That's exactly right.
Do you have email, Tommy?
Yes. Here's something about Rust-Oleum getting on brick. He says, hi. Last summer I painted and primed my wrought iron rails and got a bit of paint on the brick and Indiana stone porch. What would be the best way to remove this? That's a guy named Andy.
Boy, I don't know.
Well, I would say this. It depends, and I'm not familiar, like he said, Indiana stone and all that, but I have in his bricks, I'm not sure, but I know on certain, what I would use is muriatic acid in a real watered-down little fashion. You don't want to get your hands in it, wear your rubber gloves, but get you a little brush and maybe try it on a spot. But I would dilute it down pretty good. Now, I understand, though, this is not really good for certain types of Mexican brick because it can kind of damage the finish. But up there, I doubt if he's plagued with a lot of Mexican brick.
Where is he?
But,
where is he? I have
no idea.
I don't know.
I don't think he said.
But anyway, I would try a light solution, maybe half and half, just of some muriatic acid. You can buy it. I guess it can get it at Lowe's down by the bottle. I buy it at the swimming pool.
Get it for the swimming pool.
Yeah,
is that what they use in pools?
Oh, yeah.
Muriatic acid. But it's good for, and I would try a little light watered down solution. And if you thought it moved some, you might strengthen it some. But just beware of the finish on your, you might try a wire brush if the paint's dry, but that's going to be enamel if it's Rust-Oleum and it might, you could try a little paint thinner, a little paint remover, but I would go with the acid.
And it's the same acid that we use in pools, don't we?
It is. Yeah. The same.
Muriatic acid.
Yep.
Happens that Ray Broyce had a little article on how to clean
he
brick.
Did.
Uh-huh. And it was short enough that I copied it and thought I'd read it.
Okay.
All right.
The question here was, there's a white powder-like substance on the brick of our new backyard patio. How can I remove this? The answer is that white substance is called efflorescence, often found on the surface of masonry, resulting from water-soluble salt deposits. Generally, efflorescence can easily be removed by natural weathering or by scrubbing with a brush and water. Proprietary cleaners formulated specifically for use on brickwork are effective in removing stubborn effervescence. Make sure the cleaner is intended for use on brick and be sure to follow the directions on the label. Improper acid cleaning procedures, insufficient pre-wetting, rinsing, and strong acid concentrations may cause additional staining or damage to the brickwork. All cleaning procedures should first be tried at different concentrations in an inconspicuous area to judge their effect. and check for any potential harm to the brickwork. And after cleaning, inspect the mortar joints. Repointing or grouting of the joints may be necessary. And he gets this information from the Brick Industry Association.
Well,
He's talking about natural weathering, and we were talking about paint remover, but we do both agree that acid in a strong form could on certain types of brick, damage the surface.
Yeah, because brick is porous. You know, yeah. People don't know that, but stuff can leak. You know, you can have water, a brick full of water, I guess.
But I would I would do my acid in a light solution.
Yeah, and I really diluted down.
Well, and we know if it's pool, if it's acid like you use in a pool, we know that Walmart has that.
And we know it's not going to hurt plaster. It doesn't hurt the plasters in our pool.
That's
so
true.
Just don't want to blemish your, like I say, certain types of bricks, and I mentioned not slighting the Mexicans. They make a lot of bricks, but I've just been read where you shouldn't use it on Mexican-type bricks. Maybe it's the adobe or whatever.
So. Oh, okay. Oh,
okay, well, I'm glad to know that. Hope there aren't any Mexicans listening. But
John Benito, you mean?
No, he was. Well, I think he means Mexican style brick is what he's talking about, right?
Yeah.
All right, moving right along.
A toilet leak problem.
A what?
A toilet leak.
Toilet leak problem. That'll happen.
This guy says that yesterday he replaced the refill valve and flapper in his toilet. Uh-huh. He said when I attempted to reconnect the supply line, which is copper, there was not enough thread exposed on the refill valve to allow for connection under the tank. Okay. I went and bought a new 9-inch flexible supply line, which connected fine. However, there is a significant water leak in the supply line at the tank when I turned the water on.
Yeah.
My initial thought was that there needs to be a washer on the end of the supply line, which connects to the tank. However, there seems to be one there already. Everything was hand-tightened, as suggested. I'm trying to be mindful of the cautions about over-tightening.
Well, yeah, but there's a bolt under that tank that holds that fitting on that may not be tight, that you can't hand-tighten.
Okay. All right. There's one thought. That was his question. Any thoughts on that? Rick?
You know what I'm saying?
That that filler thing goes through a hole in the tank, and there's a bolt that holds it in
place. Yeah, there's a nut or something that
then
you screw down.
Then for you to... tighten to put your supply line, because those flexible supply lines have all the stuff they need.
The washer's going to be in there.
Yeah,
you know.
Just almost won't leak. I mean, but that bolt, there may be a rubber something that goes up ahead of that bolt. But I thought the supply valve had a rubber thing that fit in that hole. That came down.
Yeah, I thought it had a plate with a big rubber gasket
rubber thing,
on it.
And then the bolt snugs it.
Yeah,
there's a bolt that snugs it up
tight.
The tank. But that's probably the bolt you need, and it's what, 3/4 inch?
Yeah, that's probably what's leaking.
I would imagine. So tighten that up. Righty tighty, lefty loosey.
Yeah.
Crescent wrench.
If you loosen it too much, son.
Yeah,
there's
then
phone.
Then you could have a problem.
You can have
That's
a real
probably one. Thomas calling.
Probably.
No, it's not me this time. Not me this time. Here's a guy that responded to that.
All right.
And we had several responses on the list about Teflon tape. He said, "Did you remember to use Teflon tape on the threads connecting the line to the toilet?" And just something that
I've had bad luck with that stuff. The last couple of times I used it, and I went back to the pipe dope, pipe putty stuff, and then the tube. And I've had
flexible,
much better luck.
On that flexible connection, he shouldn't need a thing.
Shouldn't need a thing. Ought to just put it on, and it ought to go.
Yeah. You would think it would be.
Yeah. That
flexible tape can give you problems. If you either wind it wrong, or you get some of it crossed, threaded, or it's a pain in the neck. Mostly.
I'd rather use pipe dope because you got to wind it a certain way.
Yeah,
it's got to be wound with the threads of the that you're gonna
It just seems like it's more trouble than what it's worth.
Yeah, pipe dope, just a little come in a little round can.
But
flat.
See that flexible supply line's got a plastic that connector is made out of plastic that he's hand tightening, and pipe dope, really you shouldn't use.
Well, plastic.
On this he shouldn't need
you
anything.
You shouldn't need those things. Are just you almost have to you'd have to try to make them leak. I mean they have so many threads on them that if they're snugged up right, it's kind of a flared thing.
Yeah,
it just shouldn't leak.
It'd be very little chances, I would think, of it leaking. But anyway, I'd say it's a bolt underneath. All right, you got one more? Where are we here?
Yes, sir. I've got one here. Here's something on excuse me, changing an element in a light fixture. This guy says, hello, we have a light in our kitchen. It has two long tubes. I guess they're called fluorescent bulbs.
Well, duh.
They have two prongs on either end, which click into the fixture. We figured the bulbs were burned out, so we bought new ones. They worked for a while, but only intermittently. After a while of messing with them, I broke the prongs off one of them, so I had to buy some more. Now I'm being told that a friend of the family had to replace some transformer or element in the fixture itself to get it to work. Do you guys know what to do,
yep,
how to do that, and can you tell me?
Yep.
Okay, go ahead.
Call somebody.
Yeah.
Good because idea. I bet they don't make those old wax-filled ballasts anymore. All the new ballasts are electric of some sort, electric ballasts of some sort. I bet you can't buy those the old kind anymore.
This is where you use that phone a friend.
Well, this is where, remember when Gordon was up here?
Yes, sir.
And he changed the ballast and the bulbs in my kitchen?
Yes, sir.
And he said, well, I didn't know that you could put an electric ballast in where those old ones went. Just follow the wiring diagram. I'd call somebody, you know, you could, it'd be a hard thing for a blind guy to do because you couldn't follow the color code. You might get your wife if you got sighted or somebody sighted around to help you.
Or buy a new fixture.
Well, I was going to say this. In other words, he's already invested in the new bulbs, which aren't exactly cheap. And so you can buy, I don't know what type of fixture you have, but say $35 or $40. Get a new, but I'm amazed that he was able to break the prongs off of them. I've
never done that.
Well, I mean, I hope he did that in installation, not dropping them, because I'll say this, maybe he doesn't know, or he or she, I guess this is a he, that you put that, when you have those prongs going vertically up and down, you slide the bulb up in there, you twist it a half a turn. You don't twist it any, I mean, and so on that little twist, a half a turn, you shouldn't break those. To break those prongs off, I'm amazed at how you did it.
Yeah, I've never seen that happen.
And it's full of gas. You don't want to, you know, but the new bulbs are smaller and put out a lot more light.
Yeah.
And so the best thing to do might just be go buy a new fixture.
You can still buy the bigger round lights, but I don't know about that, you know, like Gordon said about the ballast, but I would just consider changing fixtures.
If the fixture's not changing, we'll call an electrician and get them, because I bet the old ballast you can't, but I bet they're all electric now and they'll work with the old fixtures if you get somebody. But, you know, if you can, just change the fixture. They're not that much.
That's what Dale up in Canada said. He said you can replace the entire fixture for about $40.
Yeah.
And it's usually a lot less trouble.
Yeah.
So that was his preferred method.
Yeah, depending on where it is and what it is. And, you know, if it's up in the kitchen ceiling, you might, that God, might be a different story.
God, aren't we good if Dale Levins agrees with us? I mean, what?
Boy, I'm telling you.
We'd have to be good.
Yeah, boy, if we can help anybody else, don't hesitate to write to
us.
Give us a call and send your love offerings. We love that.
Exactly.
All right, Houston Vic. We'll try to do better next week. I guess we lied if we didn't say we forgot about you.
I'll try to be a little more on the ball next week at
so
the beginning.
Will we. We'll try to be a little more on the ball.
I'll try to be.
All right. Listen, keep us posted on all things considered.
March Madness.
On March Madness.
Will do. Will do.
And we'll talk to you next week. Thanks, Tom.
Okay, buddy. Bye-bye.
Let's see if we can hear me hang up here. Let's try it. Here we go. Let's see.
Nope.
There it goes.
Yeah.
I like to hear that little Skype.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a little short. We're going to take a short break here. I know what you're talking about. Be right back. More with the Blind Handyman. Hang on. Don Pat, Don Shar in the house. I'm Phil Parr. Hang on. am so confused. Let's do this on the air so we can hear. There it's dialing.
There it goes.
There it's dialing. This is Skype, friends. We're using Skype, and with any luck, this guy will say, "Hello, I'm Jeff Eden."
Yeah.
Mr. Barr.
Mr. Jeff.
Yeah.
How are you?
Well, I'm fine, thank you.
We're a little late. We had little problems. You know how these computers will do, blind guys. Just screw up on you, and not much you can do. We're on the air, by the way.
We are on.
Don't say anything.
Oh, so nothing nasty.
Nothing, well, just sort of moderately nasty. Jeff Eden is our guest. And, Jeff, you are, I always forget where you are. You're in Canada somewhere.
I'm in Canada somewhere. I'm in a town called Welland, which is on the Welland Canal that connects Lake Erie and Lake Ontario. And for most people's understanding of geography, I'm about 15 miles from Niagara Falls.
15 miles north of Niagara Falls.
More west.
More west.
Yeah.
Well, I've been to Niagara Falls, and it was a nice time of year, so we enjoyed it. Actually, it was October, so it was a little cool, but not bad. We stood out on the balcony and listened to the falls. That's as close as I cared to get. Sounds like a big, powerful thing to me. I don't want to get too close to it.
Well,
anyway,
it keeps the lights on up here.
I guess it does, doesn't it?
So, Jeff, how...
What do you care?
Jeff,
mm-hmm.
How far are you, like, from Buffalo, New York, or, like, from something, the Upper Peninsula in Michigan? Or?
Well, just about 15 miles from Buffalo.
Okay. Now I know.
So I'm at that top corner of Lake Erie.
Right. Ah. Okay.
Right.
And Michigan would be about 170, 80 miles.
Sault Ste. Marie or something?
Yeah. Sault Ste. Marie, oh, my God, no.
She's further north, right?
400 miles the other way.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's north.
So are you always a Canadian or native... Native of Canada?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Is there any other kind?
I don't know about all that. So I think we talked about this first. We've had you as a guest on Blind Like Me. You went to the Canadian, whatever they would call their school for blind people.
I did too.
That's where you went, and I think you enjoyed it, as I remember.
Well, there were things about it I enjoyed. I was very lonely and away from a lot of things, but certainly there were some things there that were lots of fun.
And when did you first develop, or when did your love of radio first manifest itself?
Boy, that's a tough question.
But it's obvious from your voice that you have done some work. You have a really nice voice, and I think I have a nice voice. So you know, there we are. It's good that we're
there. You go.
Good, okay. We could get together, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right. What? Let's see. I've forgotten. Don. What we're going to talk to Jeff about? Tell me again.
Well, we're going to talk about a few handyman things, and then another thing. And I forgot actually to tell you about this. Jeff was telling me about that he's gotten into using voice recognition a lot on the computer. And like I told him, I said, well, we talk about anything on this show, we might talk about that a little bit and how it's working out and how he's using it and how he got it set up and things like that.
In other words, instead of typing, you're just telling it to do things.
I do too. Yes, it's much more receptive than my wife.
Well, I think I was married to her sister, but
I haven't typed on my wife yet. Maybe that'll work.
That's true. But what type is she? Listen, this could go on forever. Well, so you say things like you'll say letter, write a letter.
Not exactly, Phil. What you'd say in a case like that is Microsoft Word or Open Word.
Okay.
There's a few options you have,
okay.
But you'd open a program, and then you'd get into a letter, yes.
Okay. And let's say right off the bat, isn't this Dragon Naturally Speaking that you're using to do this?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have also tinkered with the Vista version of voice recognition, and I have it working.
Well, I was just going to tell you, I've heard that Vista can do this really well.
Are you
better than they say it will?
Really?
Really?
Well, I suspect, Phil, this would ring true with you. I suspect it has a good deal to do with how clearly you speak. Now, right in the Naturally Speaking manual, it says they expect you to speak somewhat like a news announcer. And if you do that, the program will perform admirably.
Yeah.
If you mumble and zing along, then the thing doesn't know what the hell you're saying.
Yeah. Are you becoming arthritic? Was that your reasoning for doing this, or you just want to play with it?
No, Phil, I developed a kind of an adult version of MS, so my left side is beginning to decrease in capacity. So my left hand is quite numb, and it's not so much that the fingers are frozen up, but I can't feel if I'm hitting keys. So I can type like hell, but it all comes out as gibberish.
Oh.
Yeah, that could be a problem.
That could be a problem. And this Vista is an off-the-shelf piece of gear, or what?
Vista is that new operating system that Windows the Windows people...
Well, yeah.
And this is built in, right into it, out of the box.
Yes.
Works really well with System Access, in fact, and JAWS, or any whatever screen reader you're using. But
And this is built right into Vista. I mean, you don't have to buy it extra.
It sure is.
Yes.
Well, that's pretty neat.
You don't have to buy Dragon, naturally speaking, if you've got a computer running Vista.
So you'd think if they could do that, they could build a screen reader in, couldn't they?
Well, there's a fear that if they do that, they could do a mediocre job and put the other guys out of business. And then nobody would be chasing quality issues.
Yeah, that's kind of what we decided with the guy that's doing the new thing that you're using. What's it called, Don?
The System Access?
Yeah, that's basically what he said, that he doesn't have all the history.
Thing.
Yeah. He can do things cheaper because he doesn't have all the Microsoft history. He didn't start from...
Doesn't have to support all the versions really back to 95 that the other ones do. So,
That's sort of a rationale, and it's sort of not a rationale. All of the existing screen readers do support. They're backwardly compatible. But probably it's a case of they can be more creative in the tools they use, where the toolboxes inside Microsoft or whatever wouldn't be probably as liberating.
Yeah.
Well, I guess Apple will tell that story because they've got their screen reader built into their operating system out of the box now. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with those folks.
If they gave that program a scripting language, it would be immensely powerful. It sounds not reliable when you're using Apple-produced software.
Okay.
So, Jeff, I have a question for you.
Sure.
First of all, what is the level? Do you have any vision?
No.
Okay. So what primary, I mean, what is you've told us about the physical part of it, but with your voice recognition, is it to navigate your computer or like, do you have a specific like typing? I guess my question is, I'm not familiar with, I'm aware of these programs, but so if you were going to access, I mean, you would say you'd be on your desktop and you would say internet. So I guess it would go, then how can you with voice recognition navigate a page? I mean, what would you give us a couple of examples, maybe?
Let me cover that territory. First of all, the Vista tool won't do that. It will just accept straight English dictation.
I gotcha.
And the JSA tool, which was the first into the market, that's the reason I own it, because I don't really need all of the keyboard commands, but it will do cut and paste. It will spell correct. It will do all of those things. So if I entered the internet, I would tell it, open Internet Explorer, and then I would probably tell it control over open site, I think is what they expect you to do. They give you a vocabulary of commands that you have to memorize.
Okay.
And it works very well if you memorize those specific commands. So open site, and then you have to speak into it, www, whatever, dogdirt.com, and away it goes. And when you reach the site, you can tell it top of page, and it'll go there. And you tell it tab, and it'll go to the next link. So it uses some of the familiar keystrokes verbally that one would become accustomed to within JAWS specifically.
Oh, great.
Okay. That's cool. That's neat.
All right. Like, for instance, if you were going to get it to do a letter, let's say you went to Microsoft Word or Works, and you're going to go, Dear Don. All right. Is it going to know to capitalize the?
Yes.
That's all built in too. How brilliant.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, and next question: will it say when you said Dear Don? Will it say Dear Don back to you?
Yes. Yes.
It will. So you'll know that
feature up. And you can turn that off as well if you really think you just want to spiel a whole thing and go back and look at it. But it speaks back to you about a second and a half to 2 seconds later. It speaks back to you what you've just said.
So it would kind of know by voice. I mean, that's the nature of the beast, recognition. When you come to the end of a sentence, does it put the period there or do you tell it period or dot, dot, dot? Or what do you – or nothing?
There are two answers. It can do that. You can turn on an automatic punctuation feature, which is not always reliable. So okay. I do it manually. I tell it, comma, you know, dear Don, comma, how are you this afternoon? Question mark.
Right. Okay, and if you don't know grammar very well, it's going to come out screwed up anyway, right?
Well, it probably has a grammar correcting feature like spell check.
You can actually do that in Word. You can tell it to do the grammar check, of course.
That is neat.
That is. It's really cool.
Well, for people that have limited keyboard skills, if you concentrate on learning the command set, you can become very, very able without touching your keys.
Well, Luann has a friend in New Orleans that has some problem typing with her hands, like you do. And I don't know if she's hip to this or not, but she's been clicking around for several years trying to find something that worked well.
I've heard that the professional version of Dragon Naturally Speaking works better, though, than the home version, if for whatever difference that makes. I don't know if it's true, but...
Well, it has specific vocabulary areas. There's a business vocabulary, medical, et cetera. So you can you can enhance it in particular areas. And I have found I have the pro version, and I have one version back. I'm at 8.1 because it's not only a couple hundred dollars to upgrade this to version 9 of Naturally Speaking. It is going to be $500 plus to upgrade JSAY.
That figures.
It's a small user base.
Yeah, they naturally have to jack up the prices because it deals with blind folks. So, yep.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of work in it. It's very creative.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
But at the same time, there's probably only a couple hundred users.
Yeah.
Now, let me just ask you this. Are you speaking into a microphone like you're talking to us now? Or how does
That's the way I use JSAY. I stumbled onto something, though, that would interest you, Phil. Uh-huh. I plugged in my Behringer B2 the other day here. I was just fiddling around, and I forgot to unplug it. And I started dictating, and it worked just fine.
Really?
I'm sorry. What is a Behringer B2?
Behringer B2 is sort of their middle-grade multi-purpose microphone.
Okay, a Behringer microphone. Okay.
It's a studio mic, yeah.
And it worked just fine.
It did, too.
Well, the mic you're on now sounds good. What is it?
It's just a Plantronics headset.
Yeah, it sounds like $1 million.
One you use in the chat room?
Yeah.
This is the chat room one. What I use with JSAY because you want to eliminate external sounds in so far as possible.
Yeah, and this is a single one directional microphone right in front of your face.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Don said you had been doing some handy. Well, one thing you've done is put together that generator.
I did, and it wasn't very difficult. You probably are able to get them your place. They're a Costco thing, and it was on sale for $300, $100 less than usual, and it really was a piece of cake.
Well, tell us about that.
Okay, tell us how big a piece of cake it was.
Well, how big a piece of cake it was. Let's see.
All right.
It's a 9-inch pie plate.
Yeah.
It came with a wrench and a set, an open-end wrench. Well, I didn't use that. I certainly
got
6-point sockets, which I prefer to use.
Yeah.
And you had to mount some bumpers on the bottom, a little rack and some bumpers, because it's a dolly. So there are two wheels that you have to mount the usual way, slip a wheel on, slip a washer on, open a cotter pin, and then a bumper gizmo on the back. That makes it into a tripod, so two wheels and a bumper.
Okay, so you lift up the back and roll it on two wheels.
That's correct. And it comes with a flip-up handle, which was a bit tricky because there weren't any instructions. You had to figure out where to put this handle. But after fiddling for a little bit, it was kind of a creative solution, the way they've made to mount this little handle to flip up. And there was a couple of other screws and wires and things to put on, but that was it.
And I was going to ask, did you have someone read you the instructions, or did you just...
Oh, hell no.
You just did it.
I scanned them, and there wasn't really anything there that was all that helpful.
Yeah.
Really?
It just told you how many bolts there were and that sort of thing.
Yeah. A packing list of items.
Now, Jeffrey, when you're saying generator, tell me about what kind of generator. I mean, what is it?
Oh,
is it gasoline or...
It's a gasoline generator to turn out, it says, 3,000 watts of electricity.
I got you. Okay.
And I bought that. We've had the odd hydro failure in the winter, which is pretty scary. Your house gets cold pretty fast.
I bet it does.
Up there it would, wouldn't it?
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
So I thought it would be really just a way for me to sleep a little better at night if I had a generator around that would just keep my furnace going. I can run a few lights, too, but who gives a damn about those?
But now, well, now your furnace is all electric, or is it electric oil fueled with electric? I mean, is
it natural gas with electrical control and, of course, a fan motor.
The fan. So
I was
going to
say, if it's 3,000 watts, wouldn't run it if it's all electric.
Yeah. Okay, so your little – well, okay, now just for grins, what is the price of a gallon of gasoline in Canada? We know what it is here.
Well, we're measuring in liters up here. We've really gone a little silly about this. We're about a dollar eight or nine a liter, and there's 4-point-something liters in a U.S. gallon. So we're looking at probably best guess would be $4.40.
Close to $5 a gallon.
But so have y'all had high gasoline for? I mean, this is not a shock to your system, right? Or has it gone up equivalent to ours?
No, it went up accordingly.
Yeah, that's okay. So in other words, y'all are not used to this either.
Nope.
Well, they're saying that the reason gasoline is so high is because the dollar is so depressed. But you don't deal in? Do you deal in dollars? No.
Well, our dollar is tied to yours at the moment. Well, I think ours is 99.7 cents today, or something like that, of your dollar.
Okay. Ours are both really taking a beating against the euro. I mean, against everybody, but.
All right, so you put this thing together. Have you gotten it tied into the system of your house yet?
No, Phil. No, I'm going to get some professional help for that because
you're going to get
a
guy
to
do that.
I can open a panel and I can put a fuse block in and such, but I won't do the flip switch and a sub panel. Nope.
Yeah, which is what you need.
Yes.
To move those breakers over to the sub panel so that you can run. Maybe the deep freeze or something in your and a few lights and your furnace and God knows your computer you've got
Got to have the computer.
You can't live without the computer, Jeff. Come on.
Well, yes, that's true. Provided that the cable system is working.
Yeah.
You know, because if the darn cable isn't hooked up, you turn the computer on, you don't have anything, no internet.
Well,
who cares?
Doesn't take much juice to run a computer.
So, Jeff, when you say you have these hydro failures during the winter, does this mean like that everyone in your city, your town? I mean, is this something you predict? I mean, is it?
No, nothing that catastrophic. Usually, if there's an ice storm or a bad wind storm, you know, certain areas will drop offline. So that they're predictable insofar as that a big storm is coming. But other than that, no, they're not predictable.
Okay. And when you're saying, I mean, would the hydro, would this be because of the dam not generating enough or the wires down or what?
Wires, I would imagine.
Wires down.
Okay. Yeah. I got you.
And you won't use this every winter, but you'll go out once a month and start it. Make sure that
will do that. Run it once a month, and I'll make sure that I use the gasoline up that's in it and probably keep a spare few gallons in the shed, which I'll dump in the car, and replace that gasoline every 6 months or so.
And so keep current, and then when these things happen, Jeff will be ready. You've lived up there 60 years, and this is the first time you've ever had a generator?
That's correct.
You say 15 years ago you didn't have a computer. And now we know what you do with
it. I think, Phil, the system's more fragile these days than it used to be. We've all had a couple of scares. And we have lived through some power outages where people did have some catastrophic freezing and so on. So this is just my idea of ensuring my comfort.
Well, and the thing is, one of the other things that's more fragile is you.
Getting older every day.
That's right. That's right.
Certainly more fragile.
The cold.
I think it's directly a product of population pollution.
Man,
I'm sure it is.
We do push the grid harder than we ever did before. And that makes it fragile.
In every case and in everywhere we do. But you know, who do we eliminate? or Phil, about could, Republicans.
Could I bring up a topic that you and I discussed, nearly a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
You had asked me about a little antenna that I whipped up for some people for AM radios.
That you described for AM radios, and I've always wanted to get the instructions on exactly how to do it and build one.
Oh, well, I can arrange that.
Well, I wish you would.
Yeah. The short description is that it's a wood square, a wood rectangle, 17 inches by 12 inches.
Uh-huh.
And I used 1x2, and I gouged a half-inch trough around the outside so I could wind a coil in it. I wound 14 wraps of number 26 wire and brought it out to an ordinary air capacitor, the famous old grid capacitors we all used in our radios, the variable capacitors, the 365 picofarad capacitor.
All right.
And tied the thing in so that it was a closed loop. And when you put your radio in the middle of that, essentially you've got the primary of a transformer.
You would. Yes, you would.
And you tune it. It becomes a passive tank circuit, passive oscillator, and you can tune into a station or even trim things off the edge that you don't want.
Because this is a variable capacitor, you can tune, and by putting your radio in the middle, you eliminate all that line noise. Is that right?
Well, you increase the signal in areas where you want it. The signal's so much cleaner than any line noise that it has the effect of dumping the line noise.
Have you ever used or do you have any experience with a select antenna?
This is just my version of a select antenna.
That's what I was thinking. This is your version of a select antenna, but it's something Mama will not let you put in the living room.
Well, that's correct, unless you've gussied it up somehow, I suppose. You could conceivably make a picture frame with this on it.
Well, you could.
Sure.
I think I've told this story before. We moved when I was 5 years old to the Quincy Street where I grew up. And it was at Christmas, and Daddy strung his antenna through the living room, and Mama hung Christmas lights on it. It was a big, long living room with a 12-foot ceiling. It was that living room was probably 30 feet long and 15 feet wide. Huge room. And he ran his antenna all around. And the next day, while he was at work, she put Christmas lights on the antenna. So, that's just my – Daddy was a rabid ham.
Yes, it would be a glowing experience, no doubt.
This is your version of a select antenna. Well, why don't you? I think I got it. Well, why don't you email me that? Send that to me, and I'll build one and just because I've got a shop and a place that I could put it and just check it out, just see how it works.
See, it works as well as the select antenna because that's the very principle it uses, except it uses a ferrite core antenna and a different rated capacitor, but it's the same principle.
So how do you control this capacitor? What little knob? How do you adjust it?
Turn it just like you would old radio.
Just turn it.
Does the
capacitor? Do you remember the old radios with the knob on the front that you could swing left and right?
Yeah. But yes. All right. So this capacitor comes with that knob on there.
No.
It comes with a shaft.
All right. So you put the knob on there.
You slip a knob on
there. Okay. Cool. Now that sounds.
But I got a box full of knobs. I got a box full of knobs.
Yeah.
I was, I've thrown radios away and just cut the line cord off and pull the knobs off and throw the radio away many times.
And now, of course, people wish they had those air capacitors. I've had people ask me for a couple. I bought a box of 40 of them, and I think I have half a dozen left.
Really? Of those variable capacitors?
Yeah.
Oh, I could probably find something to take one out of.
Oh, they're as common as all get out.
I could probably find some old junky radio amplifier that I could take one out of. Select antenna, the thing that bothers me, but we won't go on about this forever, the thing that bothers me is the ratio is so narrow. I mean, you got, to the left all the way is just, to the right all the way is just it's a three quarters of a turn. It's just so, I'd like to gear it down a little bit.
Do that with this one if you, knew enough about it and you could put a little belt drive on
it. Put a little dial cord on it. Like Daddy used to replay, they used to all have dial cords. And you think, am I this radio selected? Well, it wasn't. You just geared down the capacitor. It was just.
Didn't they drive you crazy, Phil? Putting dial cords on?
Yeah. My daddy was an expert at replacing dial cords. He was.
God, get that. Just get the right number of turns on the shaft and go around, pick up the spring and slide it
put
in.
Put that little spring on and just put the right amount of tension, And
yeah.
I've got an HQ 129, old HQ 129. I've never looked in it, but I think it's gear driven. It just moves so easy. All right, Jeff. What else? Is that about it?
Well, I don't know, unless you want to build things. I guess the only other thing I have to share that I tell people about they don't think often about is if you're looking for a cheap ruler, go and buy yourself a piece of 5/16 threaded rod. Yep. And on 5/16 threaded rod, every turn of a nut is of course 1/16 of an inch because it's 16 threads to the inch.
Yeah.
And you can get real creative and make all kinds of measuring tools out of that.
Well, that's pretty good. That'd be a
handy.
Select antenna is about $70. You could sure build this thing for a whole lot less, couldn't you?
Oh gosh, yeah. I mean, if you want to buy back to the antenna topic, you bet. You know that you're talking 6 feet of 1x2, and use your compound miter saw and cut it off and join the corners and whatever way you choose.
Yeah, make a frame.
I'll make a frame, and then I've got a router table. I could route out a little trough along the edges.
Sure, pass it over your saw blade a few times, middle to out, and get the half-inch trough in there.
Well, I think I've got a dado blade somewhere.
Somewhere in the shop, yeah.
Man's got it made, doesn't he? Jay, Jeff, thank you, sir, and we're going to go, and we appreciate you, and we'll see you Friday night. How about that?
Oh, that sounds like a deal to me, sir.
Thank you. Jeff Eaton from up north where it's cold. We'll be getting, it's getting warmer up there now. All right, Don, you got something you're going to talk about. Let's take just a short, quick break and be right back.
There's a rainbow before me. Skies above can't be stormy. Since that moment of bliss, that thrilling kiss, it's heaven when you find romance on your menu. What a difference a day makes. And the difference is you.
Anyway, welcome back to the Blind Handyman Show. It's Phil Parr along with Don Patterson and Don Shaw. Called you the incomparable Don Shaw, Houston?
Yeah, I think something like that. Man, I don't know.
Go ahead.
Anyway, I got a little quick something here to talk about that'll kill a couple of minutes here.
All right. We're all for that.
Don Patterson here, I don't know, a month or so, a few shows ago, talked about weed eaters and what a pain in the butt a weed eater is, just always having to deal with the string.
Yeah.
Just always having to wind out more string. You're just always messing with the string more than you're doing anything else, seems like.
Yeah.
And told us about a weed eater that you could buy that he bought that had this system on it that you could put in like lengths of string in the weed eater head. Which sounded really neat. It sounded like that would be a solution to the string problem. It sounded like it would work fine. I was down at Walmart checking out. Weed eaters are just a pain in the butt. So it was just kind of just checking things out and looking around. And I found the same kind of deal that uses the pieces of string that you just buy the weed eater head and put it on your existing. If you have a good existing gasoline weed eater, you can put this new weed eater head onto that. It says it'll fit most brands of weed eaters.
It's like putting the saw blade thing on.
Yeah, it's probably sort of something
same
like
kind
that.
Of deal. Yeah.
Anyway, I bought this, and I'll be able to talk more about it later. Haven't put it on the weed eater yet. And, you know, I think it's going to be fairly easy, fairly friendly, but I'll be able to tell you more about that after I actually use it. But I thought it was a really neat idea for someone that had an existing weed eater that works, that wants to maybe solve the string problem or make life a little easier.
What is this one you use?
To be able to buy this for $14 or so, and put it on your weed eater and
Hopefully it will work.
What is it used to cut with? String?
It uses string. It uses the length of strings like Don was talking about, and I guess the ratchet system.
It's called like a quick load. And what it is instead of having a reel of string that you have the little spring-loaded thing and you depend on tapping your weed eater on the ground periodically to advance the string, which usually fails miserably.
Yeah, it does.
And it gets tangled up. And I've even had weed eaters, the Ryobis, had two reels of string. So just double your double your trouble. This quick load thing is you pre-cut your string, or you can buy it if you want to pay more, but we buy a big bulk row and cut our own, usually 8 to 10 inches. 10 inches is whatever your machine recommends. And with these adaptive heads, I'm not sure what, but it's about 10 inches. And you feed it into a little notch, a little hole. You force it in one way, and it has little prongs that will not let you put it back out.
Uh-huh.
In other words, you would have to pull it out the same on the other side, the same way you're putting it in.
So it's a one way.
And so
it goes through one way.
That
okay.
way, when you get up against a fence or brick or concrete slab that uses a lot of string, and you're constantly pounding your old system and trying to get the string to advance. This, when you use it, when you use the strings up, you stop the weed eater, a lot of times you might need a pair of pliers, you pull the little nubbin that was left out, put two more pieces of string in, and go on about your business.
So you pick up the string you already used and use it again?
No, it's already used up. You just have some pre-cut. Like
okay.
Emily pre-cuts maybe 10 pieces in a outing, and ours takes two of them at a time. And so you might use a little more string. Maybe you'll know, Don, if you do or not, but your tangle problems, the not feeding, are eliminated. There's nothing, just you put the string in and you use it up. You put another piece in, you use it up. There's no tangling, no reels that won't dispense, no
That's
cursing,
true.
No throwing the weed eater.
So the amount of string, when you do the 10-inch or whatever sections it uses, so the amount of string will be just about right to go from the spindle about out to the cutoff blade. And there you are. I mean, it's just set up and ready to go. And
I think usually if you cut it 10 inches on ours, it's been our experience, when you first turn it on, you'll hear a click one time where it's cutting it off. It may be a little past the blade,
okay.
And the first go-round cuts it off.
That's cool.
And
that's
then
really
you,
neat.
I paid pretty good money to have my Ryobi converted over to that, and it was a lot more than $14 if you can get this. But I would, a curious thing, a lot of home use weed eaters have a curved shaft, but they do make some that have a straight shaft, and you might want to check and make sure that whatever you use is going to work on a, because boy, I think the RPMs or the vibration is a lot. And I think that was my problem on the one I paid to have converted, because actually I did not do very well with it. So I bought one that was already that way. I didn't have to convert it.
I noticed this one seemed to, the end, I haven't taken it out of the package yet, but it does seem a little heavy. I did notice that. I don't know what effect that's going to have spinning around on the end of that shaft. And this weed eater, the Ryobi weed eater, of course, has the curved shaft.
The curved shaft, So make sure that I would specifically check to make sure your thing is going to fit that.
But it said on the package that Ryobi is one of the brands that will fit.
Okay.
And weed eater. It said 95% of all weed eaters.
I think
that existing weed eaters it'll work on.
You will love it.
I think it'll be neat.
Yeah.
But you haven't tried it yet.
I have not yet.
So we have no firsthand.
Later
on
in a few shows,
experience.
I will talk more about this when I actually use it.
Maybe you could take the Olympus outside and fire it up.
Yeah, that'd be a deal, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Here the weed eater, actually, Don, actually, eating weeds.
We tried all of these, another thing, like the nylon blades,
you
can put on those. And, man, we had almost some serious, one of those flew off and hit Emily in the leg. It cut her pretty well. I mean, they were an adapter kit. So we don't even, string is what you need.
String would be my limit also. I thought about that.
And actually, with your adapter, you can use a little heavier gauge of string maybe than you can on the reel, and that'll also last longer.
Right.
I think you'll like it. So.
Yeah, well, we're going to find out pretty soon.
Interesting to see what he was.
Very blind friendly as far as putting the string and knowing how much you got on.
Oh, it's
got
to be. Of course,
running a weed eater is not blind friendly. Let me mention that to you.
No, sir. But you can help the wife.
You could help her by...
Or the mate. Mate.
You could help her by bringing her a beer occasionally.
There you go.
That'd help.
There you go.
Something like that.
Getting the hell out of the way.
Yeah, getting out of the way. I've spurned yard work. It's good to be old because I don't fool the pool. I don't care anymore. You know, just...
yeah.
Just old and don't care. But I am going to build that antenna Jeff talked about.
I think you could put a napkin on it and set the radio on it. They'd never know. You know.
All right, we've done, what is this, 128?
It is.
228. That's what I meant, 228. They knew what I meant, didn't they? down at the farm.
Well, we keep getting emails that says, can he keep it straight?
Could Phil please get him straight? Anyway, we've done another one. We'll do another one next week. We appreciate you being with us, and there goes the clock. Thank you, Don Shaw, Don Pat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Gentlemen, we'll do it again next week. I'm Phil Parr, and I see said the blind man as he picked up his hammer and saw.